Not just me.
Hi, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the October 1st, 2019 meeting of the Economic Development, Tourism, Housing, Planning, and Transit Committee. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Everybody knows Mary Bikert today was her last day with the county, and we're pleased to have Nettie Tomshaw join us as the clerk for this committee. So just want to welcome Nettie with us. And Nettie, if I'd ask you to please call the roll.
Sure. Okay. Legislators Archer.
Here.
DeLon. Litz.
Here.
Mayo.
Here.
Maloney Joseph.
Here.
Rodriguez.
Present.
Chairman Waltman.
Here.
Okay, and I hope everyone had a chance. The minutes from last month's meeting have been circulated. I hope everybody had a chance to review them. I'll request a motion now to accept the minutes from last month's meeting, the September 3rd meeting. Is there a motion to accept the minutes?
I don't remember seeing them, but I'm going to say yes.
Okay. You'll make the motion?
I'll make the motion, yes.
Well, they were circulated. It came in Nettie's email last week.
So we're on the OneDrive.
Yeah, it's on the OneDrive. So we have a motion.
I'll read it later.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the meeting minutes from the September 3rd, 2019 meeting of this committee, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No.
I'll abstain. I was not here for that meeting.
Yeah, you were. You came in from Ireland for that meeting.
Mr. Chair.
He doesn't.
Mr. Chair.
Still vote.
Mr. Chair. Through the chair to legislator list. You can do what you want, but just generally speaking, even if you're not here, that does not require an abstention.
That's fine. I'm still going to abstain.
Okay.
That's the prerogative.
Do you have that sheet to sign?
Yep. All right. That's right here.
Cool.
All right. We're going to move on. We're going to take one resolution out of order. We're going to move on to our resolution packet. We're going to begin tonight, though, with resolution 423, amending a capital project number 529. Purchase of mass transit buses and related equipment, and amending the 2019 capital fund budget, also county area transportation. And we're joined tonight by Sasha. So Sasha, if you...
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move it.
Well.
Second.
Thank you.
Hi,
I'm just
everyone.
Trying to... it's urgent.
Hi, everyone. For those that don't know me, my name is Sasha Ahmed. I'm the Deputy Director of UCAT. This is just a resolution to establish our capital project. All of our grants, federal grants, were executed over the summer, and now we can move on to actually ordering buses. This resolution includes 5 new buses and a program that I think back in the summer some of you were here. Carol Hargrove, our director, was creative and thought of a plan to actually use federal dollars to order diesel DPF filters, diesel particulate filters, so we can have a program of switching them out as they, you know, get dirty and catch the emissions. So that way we can have buses on the road instead of in the garage, and start a rotation program. So this is just for that. If you have any questions, let me know. And there is no local share on any of these projects because the state is actually offsetting the normally required county share. So there are no county dollars to this project.
Legislator Rodriguez, please.
Through the chair, Sasha, thank you. And please send our regards to Director Hargrove and thank her for everything that she's been doing. So it's really great.
I will do that. And just so you all know, she has made it formal that her... last day with the county will be in December, and I will make sure to distribute an invitation for her retirement to all of you. It's good that she's not here. It's somewhat of a surprise, but thank you so much for also taking this out of order.
Thank you. All right, any discussion among the committee members on this resolution? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No, passed unanimously. We're going to take another resolution out of order tonight, Resolution 419, for approving the execution of a contract amendment causing the aggregate amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Asset Works LLC Information Services. And again, this is Resolution 419. Is there a motion?
Move.
Second.
Okay, we're joined by Carla. Carla?
Carla Wainwright, Assistant Director of Applications Development for Information Services. This amendment increases the current contract by $21,794. The Asset Works software is used by both UCAT and DPW, Central Auto, to track the maintenance of the county's fleet, buses, sheriff vehicles, you know, all county vehicles. So this is to extend an increase for an additional year.
Legislator Rodriguez.
So can you explain why there was an increase?
So every year there's an increase to extend the maintenance. It's typical just to maintain the support and maintenance for the software for an additional year.
And this is, we've been using this program since
2010. It was purchased via an RFP process.
If I may, is it contemplated anytime soon that we look into change this program or go to another RFP?
We've had no request from the departments to look for something else. Yeah, I mean, they're kind of embedded in it now. You know, a lot of the vehicle history and whatnot is in it. Not to say that we couldn't at some point look for another piece of software that could, you know.
I mean, I presume your canvas, the IT or IS canvasses the market for that latest technology in this group, and we know we're getting
not on a regular basis, but if we had a request to do so, that we would. Again, it's I think we've actually looked at another product, and I can't remember what it was, but we were thinking about switching over. Actually, DPW was kind of initiating a look at another product. I think PubWorks has something. We use PubWorks through DPW for facility maintenance, and it wasn't able to do the same ticketing and service tickets that the current system does, so I think they abandoned that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any other discussion or questions related to this resolution? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, unanimously. Okay, we're going to... You know what? We're going to take a lot of things out of order tonight. We're going to skip to Resolution 417. It's resolution approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, RUPGO Incorporated, Department of Planning. Is there a motion on this resolution?
So moved.
Moved and seconded, we'll say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any discussion? Dennis Doyle, the Director of Planning, anything you'd like to add?
This is a relationship to program delivery and administration and direct assistance to homeowners. It's a homeownership program. The county received $590,000 in community development block grant funds. RUPGO is a designated recipient under that, so that it's a pass-through through the county to RUPGO for those. We anticipate that we'll do somewhere in the neighborhood of between 20 and 22 housing units, and will generate somewhere in the neighborhood of about $3.1 or $3.2 million in private equity investment through banks and other funding availability. This is the third contract in 3 years we've had with RUPGO. Since 2004, the county has anticipated that the county has done somewhere in the neighborhood of about 158 units and helped many more individuals with respect to either home ownership or housing rehabilitation.
Legislator Archer, please.
Just one thing. I noticed in section A5, you're still showing Adele as the county exec. I don't know if that matters in this.
I actually think it may be
the timing of when it was submitted.
The contract, the actual application went in when she was acting county executive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was shown updated on 9/12, but that was somehow missed. So.
Yeah, I'll check it. But if it's the source of the application, which is where I think it is, then it's as submitted, I think. But I'll check it. If we have to update it, we'll.
Okay.
A5, you said?
A5.
Thank you.
Legislator
Maloney. Is this the pass-through that we used to charge a fee? And
that's correct.
Yeah, okay.
I should mention that it is consistent with the legislative
Any other discussion on this resolution? I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Approved unanimously. Okay, we'll move on to Resolution 420, approving the reallocation of funds within the Ellenville Million Program, Department of Planning.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Okay, Lisa?
I simply Berger, just want to, I may defer over to Steve for a second, but I simply want to tell everyone that, especially with my background in workforce, that investing in health and well-being of individuals in the Ellenville area is as important as investing in brick-and-mortar infrastructure. Certainly, a healthy population impacts a whole lot of things, including the ability for people to get to work, to be able to take care of their families, to be able to go to work. And in order for the businesses in Ellenville to function, they need a healthy workforce. So therefore, I think that investing in health and well-being of the community of Ellenville falls squarely within economic development goals.
Legislator Maloney.
I'm going to try to be kind. While I agree with half of the premise there, how important some of these things are, I don't think it falls anywhere near economic development. I just went back and watched the meeting where the legislature approved the Ellenville Millions again, and there were a lot of skeptical legislators. The vote got through, and people in the community, legislators, we were all concerned that we were taking a million tax dollars and we were setting up this fund to go ahead and build the economy in Ellenville. And it just, so far, it just hasn't happened. There's other issues. I believe the Ellenville Hospital, at one point, the head of the EDA was on the board of the Ellenville Hospital and isn't abstaining from votes. We're giving money to the Ellenville Hospital to build the economy.
For
some kind of nurse tech training. That is also not economic development. I'm sorry, we set $1 million aside to rebuild Ellenville, a struggling community.
But I'd like to speak
a community
to
that was...
Mr. Chair, can we please have order?
That was looked at as further stressed than other areas in the county, which is why we took $1 million to do this here. And what I have seen, and what most people have seen, is not economic development. It's a place to spend the money. We're finding ways to spend this money that we set aside that sounded great in theory. Take $1 million, help build a struggling part of the county. And then what we did, in my opinion, is we basically just went and found some places to spend that money. And I think that DSS and the programs there and that and the money that we allocate there is probably where we should be looking if we want to help the Ellenville Hospital, not from the Ellenville Millions and not calling it economic development.
Okay, I'm going to ask Lisa Berger to respond, please.
Just for one second, quickly, to respond to your criticism of the workforce work that was done. So that training that was done was approved unanimously by the board, and I oversaw that in my role as a workforce development board director, and I can tell you that every single person that went through the training received a higher-paying job, which in and of itself is economic development. And so it was successful because you're actually impacting individuals with better economic prospects for themselves and their families. And so I would argue, and the other thing that I think is very important for you to understand is that not everyone who went through that training was ultimately employed by Ellenville. And we made that clear at the point where we created that program with UCEDA, that it was for people who lived in the Ellenville-Warson area, and in particular, if they worked at Ellenville Hospital, that was fantastic, and they were to be received into the program, and there was money there for other people to work at other places, like Orange Regional and other places that employed people in healthcare. We went back through that, and everyone received a raise in pay and a job after that. So I think it was successful.
Okay, Legislator Maloney, one more time.
by the definition that you just used of economic development, I could spend a lifetime here in Ulster County. I wouldn't have to leave the county. And I could come up with programs and trainings and different ways to spend that money. It's just not what that money was meant for. I'm not disagreeing that that training was a nice thing to do. What I'm saying is, it's not what the Elmville Millions was set aside for. And there were issues with who was making the decision where that money went and who was voting on the money going there. You'd have a tough time convincing the hundreds of thousands of people that work here. It was their money that was set aside to rebuild Elmville. And the way we've spent the money, you'd have a tough time justifying it. And if we would go back and take what we've done with that money now and take it back to that legislature that voted on the Elmville Millions, I doubt it would pass. This is not a critique on you or the work that you do. It's an overall approach to economic development.
Lisa, please. I'm going to ask, I'm going to recognize Legislator Nolan.
So, each legislator is entitled to his own opinion. But the development of this program involved the community that was there. It was done in a way that I would certainly vote again to go in that direction if I'd been able to do so. And this particular allocation is very much concerned with economic development in a way that is creative and outside the box, which is exactly what these funds were intended to do, which was to fill gaps. So this healthcare allocation not only is justified in terms of the return from it directly, but it actually leverages millions and millions of dollars for things like feeding young children and families, which is what you need to have in order to have a workforce. So you have to have children show up with full bellies in order to learn, and you need to have workforce families have their family life in an order for them to be able to show up for their jobs. So this money will leverage money that allows people to be hired to run these programs, first to build the some capital monies as well, and then to run these programs, and then to have a stronger, healthier workforce. So my personal opinion is that this is a fantastic use of money that was set aside to fill gaps and do creative, out-of-the-box type of economic development. And I don't think we will come to consensus around the table or in the legislature about what real economic development is. And I accept the perspective of somebody who views it quite differently than I do. But I think that by following this approach, we're going to have much better economic development in Ulster County than if we don't.
Okay, I'm going to recognize Legislator Rodriguez, and after that, I'm going to recognize Mr. Kelly.
Well, that's my point. If we're done with sort of the pontifications that are going around, we want to make sure we actually, as opposed to us going and debating, this resolution about a program that we have actually not been read in on. How about we get read in and have Steve? Because a lot of people right now are talking about a lot of stuff right now. Sure. We're not even hearing from Steve.
Mr. Kelly, please.
Thank you. Can I approach the table?
Certainly. Yes. Welcome.
Thank you. So, hearing the development around the table, the discussion, I would like to share with you a few things about the Elmville Million and the way that the recommendations were made. There was a committee that was appointed, which I was a member of, and I'm a very entrepreneurial guy, so I'm not sure your business, Mr. Maloney, but I'm an entrepreneur, and I just happen to be in healthcare.
I don't operate a business, by the way. And
he's talking.
Mr. Kelly, I would actually not request that you don't address any legislator directly like it in such
I
a matter.
Do that
if
again.
You,
okay.
But we're anxious to hear about those. So.
Okay.
I mean, he asked my question.
Then I apologize. If
no, no worries.
I spoke inappropriately.
No.
So I'm an entrepreneur. I have owned businesses, and a long time ago, when I was in my late 20s, I had been working for IBM. I worked for Control Data. I was very successful in the IT field, and I was an entrepreneur in that field. And I went and I visited my 90-some-year-old grandfather, and I talked to him about how successful I was and how, you know, the nice clothes I had, the new cars, the house before I was 25, and he said to me, he said, "Steve, I'm disappointed in you, because what you're doing isn't really helping people." And my grandfather was a farmer and a Presbyterian minister, and any money he ever made, he gave away to other people because he felt he needed it more. And so he was disappointed in me, but he told me, this is the admonishment, I carry with me all the time, and that is, he said to me, maybe your children or your grandchildren will amount to something. He died not long after that. And I changed careers. I went back to school, and I left IT, and I left industry, and I decided to use my entrepreneurial abilities in healthcare. And that's what I do. I took a failing hospital, a bankrupt hospital, and I took it through bankruptcy, and I turned it around. I have a profitable, not wildly profitable, but in this business, a profitable organization. I'm really proud of that. I have quality that is outstanding. I have the fastest emergency department in New York because I really believe in execution. I am an economic engine. My hospital has more than doubled its business. We have many more employees than we ever had before. So when we talk about investing in a good investment, 16 years ago when I got there and the place was about to close, it was not a good investment. And there are people around the table who participated in solving that and helping us with that. So I didn't recognize anybody, but they were here.
There's one.
Well, all right. Then I would say there's a person who was here and participated in that without naming them. And so... We've gone from being a really marginal hospital by every metric, financially bankrupt, quality that was very, very marginal, and now we're doing really well. What we have been in is we've been in the sick business. That's basically what we're in. We help people when they get sick. And the paradigm is changing for small hospitals. We need to be in that wellness business also. And so we have, as the business has changed, we've been able to secure grants because nobody's willing to pay us to do wellness. They only want to pay us per click when somebody's sick. How many ER visits? How much per ER visit? How many days is someone in the hospital? We pay for that. If we have any kind of procedure, they pay for that. But the only way to drive down healthcare costs is going to be to have the community's metrics of for health be better so that they will need less healthcare. That's the only long-term solution to the cost of healthcare. And we have a small community that's surrounded by mountains with a fairly limited number of providers and only one hospital. And we are working on population health projects and have been able to secure over $3 million in funding for those projects from OASAS, because we're doing a lot of fighting the opiate epidemic, from HRSA, which is the research arm of Medicare for helping for projects around childhood obesity and helping families learn how to eat better, for exercise programs. So we're doing walking programs. We do hikes with people. We are doing a lot of programs for seniors. In fact, when I left here, I spoke to a group of seniors that were educating on how they can live better and be healthier and cost less in the long run and manage their chronic illnesses. And so the purpose that we asked for this money is to help us with that so that we don't have to use the funds from operations, which are pretty scarce, that should be reinvested in our main business, which is the sick business, in equipment and facilities, to be able to have space for the 9 or 10 people that we have hired as a result of these grants that we have for this this new purpose, fighting the opiate epidemic, which we are partners with, we're partners with Ulster County, with all of you, even though you may not realize that. We're partners with the Institute for Family Health, a large federally qualified healthcare center that deals with poor people, and the health metrics in the Ellenville area are much worse than the rest of the county. We have twice the heart disease rate, we have four times the diabetes, and I'm not sure, but like teen pregnancy is a huge problem. So it's from children to seniors. We have very poor health. And so I see that as a huge opportunity. Like, how much worse can it get? So if we can find ways to be able to help people to connect with their own health and be able to live healthier and to exercise more and eat better and make better decisions throughout their life, we will be able to do something that has not really been done anywhere else.
So this is about fighting the opioid epidemic?
That is part of it.
So
yes,
look,
it is.
I'm just going to be brutally honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the hard things about being a legislator, being an elected official, is you get your heartstrings pulled.
Mm-hmm.
That's not our job. It was somewhat moving. I appreciate what you shared, but it's not what the Ellenville Millions was for, and that's my job. And I wish you the best of luck. I'm sure you'll get the votes, because it is hard to vote against things like that, especially when you come in here and you tell us in a way about there's problems, there's kids, and for anyone to vote against this, it'll be looked at as we're voting against the opioid epidemic. And let me tell you something, it was not drug addiction what the Ellenville Millions was for, and it's very dangerous when government hard-earned tax dollars start getting spent this way, where people come in, they tell you a great story, a moving story, and then you allocate funds to be spent in a way they never were. That is a recipe for disaster. We see it. All over the state and all over the country.
Mr.
Kelly,
before you respond, I'm going to Legislator Rodriguez.
It's just, I've heard nothing here that makes me think that this money is being spent the way it was meant to be spent. And that's how that's not your job. Your job is to come here and ask for the money, and you've done that. Our job is to make sure that this money is being allocated the way it was meant to be allocated when we sold it to the community. We got $1 million here. We're going to go build up this depressed area.
Okay, Legislator Rodriguez,
people
please.
People need to eat, and we can't have and if people are on drugs, struggling with drug addiction, and people are struggling putting food on their table, then the Ellenville Millions was not meant to feed people. It was not meant for the opioid epidemic. It was meant to build industry and create real jobs over in Ellenville. So I'm just sorry.
The largest private employer in Ellenville.
Legislator Rodriguez, please.
Thank you. So I feel the need to sort of correct a lot from a lot of different sources right now. Because unfortunately, I was here, you know, for this the first time and the second time. So whether we like it or not, the Ellenville Million, it's only one, to a certain degree, if we are to use Legislator Maloney's expression, being frank, was somewhat of a interesting marketing ploy. The Ulster County Legislature authorized $1 million to be made available in anticipation of money coming from the state of New York to go and deal with impacts of the casinos. So how we go and define how those dollars sort of get allocated is in fact up to this legislature. So while I appreciate your position, Legislator Maloney, there is flexibility, but to back you up, it is in fact up to this legislature to go and decide how to go and allocate those dollars. Now, that said, one of my problems that I do have is I know full well I was approached by somebody who had also previously put in an application for funding, and in fact by the previous president had failed to actually bring their name forward for funding actually during the Jumpstart competition component. There seems to be a bit of a fait accompli in which you know, those who are in the know seem to be the ones who get those dollars. And so my problem is not with Ellendale Hospital nor Mr. Kelly, who I'm a big fan of and I am personally very fond of, and my mother is personally very fond of.
I love your mother.
I know, we all do. So it's one of these things where this has nothing to do with the organization or your efforts, because I think, you know, you are a credit to this county, and what you do is a credit to this county. But my problem is, from a process standpoint, whether or not, and again, part of this unfortunately deals with previous individuals, you know, who were involved in the process, who I'm trying to basically kind of not kick them on their way out the door, so to speak. But let's just be candid. Unfortunately, there was not as much public outreach with regards to how, you know, that we now have this amount of dollars available, and, you know, how are we sort of going back to, you know, other projects that maybe are where it's more critical to fund them out of this pot than necessarily, for example, there may be other dollars that we can allocate to Ellendale Hospital to go and accomplish the programs that Mr. Kelly is looking to go and do. Did we actually really have that conversation? And so therefore, you know, really part of this comes down to, you know, again, for good or for ill, you know, what are we looking to kind of go and do? What was already done with the Ellendale Million, right? And if there are, in fact, actually other just as valuable programs or projects that we should be involved in, rather than necessarily this one, because there may be other dollars available. Look, I mean, those of us who serve on the audit committee know that there is an additional, unencumbered fund balance went up by about $5.5 million. You know, I hear rumor there's going to be 30 new positions proposed by the county executive in the upcoming budget. You know, I mean, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff programmatically sort of going on. And so therefore, there may be other ways to kind of go and accomplish this program without having to use these dollars specifically.
All right. Legislator Litz, please.
Yeah, I mean, my esteemed colleague pointed out that the Ellendale Million was a spinoff from us not getting a casino in our county. So it's a one-shot deal. And I'm adding up and looking at the amended allocations, which equals $1 million. How much money has been spent to date, and how much money is available if for an additional program, whatever that might be?
In the resolution, $887,000 has been spent. No, allocated. It's allocated as it was spent, because in fact we actually won't know that number. In fact, we need the Department of Finance at a certain point. For clarification, the amendment that was handed out, and it says that the amended allocation equals a million dollars. Dennis Doyle, to clarify.
I can answer legislator's question.
Thank you.
In terms of spent to date, and these are figures as of September 30th, $668,418 have been spent to date. And committed via contract, which means that it's allocated, but it's not spent, is $217,764. That gets you to your 887 that's in the resolution. So the unallocated is approximately $113,817.
Can you repeat the first number, please?
668,418.
And then 217,764.
Yeah.
Which then
gets to 887.
Yeah. If I added it wrong,
You added it wrong, but that's okay.
But
that doesn't actually add up.
But anyway. There's 113,800 and change left.
I mean, you're not that far off.
Which is unallocated.
I think what we did is it wasn't completed. The spent wasn't completed until when we wrote the resolution. Just remember that. So, okay.
Legislator Litz, does that answer the question you had?
That's what I was looking for.
Legislator Nolan?
So I think it would be helpful. I think that Dr. Kelly was about to provide us with some information about the role of the Ellendale Hospital in the local economy there and maybe in the county economy. And you're anticipating and the change in employment that you anticipate if you're able to obtain a space for the hiring of people. Can you bring that out a little bit more?
Yes. So the Ellenville Hospital, Ellenville Regional Hospital, is the largest private employer in that part of the county. It is the third largest employer, and it is the fastest growing employer. It has grown. We have been an employment, you know, an economic development engine, and we have helped to recruit doctors to the community that weren't there and wouldn't be there otherwise, which add a further dimension that is a multiplier of that. So it isn't just what we've actually done. It's we've really replaced a lot of physicians that have retired. And at a time when the community has been really struggling, it is a poor community, and if it was to lose healthcare, I think it would be irreparable. I really think that you need education, needs schools, and you need healthcare as kind of, and you need certainly law enforcement and government, but these are essential services, or there won't be any economic development. Nobody's going to move their business someplace where there aren't schools or are not healthcare for their employees. So I see investing in us as economic development, helping to anchor us and helping to secure us in an unstable environment. We are not owned by an outside entity, so any money that we make is plowed back into our enterprise and back into our community, which is not the case in other places. Most of the hospitals in the Hudson Valley have been taken over by larger entities. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but decisions are being made someplace else, and in Ellenville, they're made in Ellenville. So for us to be able to continue to grow and prosper, this is this would help us to do that, and it's helping us to advance programs that, in this case, is fighting the largest public health crisis of our time that's killed 500,000 people, 10 times as much as Vietnam. And we have the highest death rate of any county in New York last year, not that long ago. My prediction is that this year, with the results of the work that we've been working on for the last year and a half or a little bit longer, are gonna drop that. I know year to date, which knock on wood here someplace, not the glass, the wood, it is substantially down. So we're delivering results, and those results are across the whole county, because our protocols are being implemented in the hospitals up here. They were implemented in the hospitals in Poughkeepsie. The things that I'm speaking in, I spoke last week in Niagara Falls at a conference, the week before in Kansas City, and 2 weeks from now, I will be speaking in Albuquerque about our work around opioids. We are nationally recognized. So it's, you know, small places, you don't expect to have great works, but we've been very, very fortunate to have things, be able to make things happen. And so this would help us.
Legislator Archer, please.
I just want to just clarify what the money will be used for, because I think that's the important piece.
Yep.
You, and so correct me if I don't have this right.
Yes.
You receive grants that allow you to hire 8 to 10 more people because you can now do these programs through this grant money. What you have is a capacity issue at the hospital.
I don't have enough space to put them.
And so what this would allow is a capital investment in the hospital for
yes.
space to bring these jobs in and do
right.
the work that the grant funding.
Right.
Okay.
So I don't have the space to do that. I have some space that we can renovate to create the space, and that's what we're asking for the money to do that. And that will... that will help us long term. I've used up all the space in the hospital except for this, the only space that's left. And it just would be really helpful for this kind of work to be able to not have to lay out capital from that's really coming out of my clinical engine that I could use for a new clinical device or some other clinical thing.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, thank you again, Mr. Kelly. Again, I don't think anyone here is actually debating or at least I don't think we are, you know, the quality of your work, or again, you know, programmatically, that we should be finding a way to go and support this. The argument, and, you know, we talked on the phone about this, you know, I can't go and say that, again, by spending these particular dollars, right, that are, quote-unquote, Ellenville, earmarked Ellenville million dollars, that it shouldn't be going to other valuable projects and finding other dollars within the county budget. Again, knowing full well right now that we will be spending additional dollars this particular year to go and support the very work that Mr. Kelly has outlined. So at this time, Mr. Chair, I would move to postpone this resolution to go and ensure that any other interested parties who, again, some people actually, I ended up speaking just directly just because I happen to have connections in the Ellenville area, are then able to sort of bring forward any programs that they may have, and those particular programs may already be within one of the buckets that we've already approved as a legislature. So at this time, I'd like to go and postpone resolution
420.
Thank you.
One second.
All right. So we have two motions that have been put forward on this floor. One to discuss, and I guess.
Okay, give one to postpone, which takes precedence over.
Okay. So on the vote on the postponement, all in favor?
Aye.
Can we be clear on this? On the who is in favor there, please, for the record.
Aye.
Okay. And all, any opposed to postponement? Okay. Motion failed. We'll take a vote on the motion, 420. All those in favor of approving 420?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Hector and Leslie Rodriguez.
Actually, for the minute, I'll vote with the in the affirmative, but okay. I expect us having this discussion going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it passes, right? I can sign this.
All right, resolution 421, authorizing the Ulster County Legislature to conduct a public hearing for the proposed acquisition of public purpose of property for the construction of the Ulster County Midtown Linear Park, PIN number 8761.82 in the City of Kingston, Department of Planning. Is there a motion?
Move it.
Second.
Okay. We're joined today by Chris White from Department of Planning, and I believe Mr. Eric Kurtz, Council. Please, if you'd like to come to the table, I think that'd be great. It'd be very helpful.
It's the hot seat.
Yeah, maybe you should pick a different one.
The big people table. So this is for the Midtown Linear Park project, which is the 0.8 mile rail trail that we're developing along the UND corridor between Cornell Street and Kingston Plaza. You may remember we were awarded $1.5 million in federal grants through the Transportation Alternatives Program. We've been working through the design. We're now at the point where we need to do what we did with our last two federal aid transportation projects. We need to do an eminent domain procedure law hearing. And we did this exact same hearing for the Hudson Valley Rail Trail in the town of Lloyd and the Kingston Rail Trail in the city of Kingston and the towns of Hurley and Ulster. So it's very similar. Everything we're going to do is very similar to what we did in the last case. But in this case, it's unique because we're not taking properties. We're basically quieting titles of the component parcels of our railroad corridor. So when the railroad bought, condemned, and took easements on this, they had a bunch of little slivers of land that were taken from adjoining properties. And I've asked Eric Kurtz to come here tonight. He's the outside counsel that we're working with to explain kind of what those properties are, because he gets it a lot better than I do, and that's why that's why I bring him.
But it's really actually a little fascinating in the sense that back in the late 1800s, when the local railroad was coming through and contacting owners and getting easements over property, those owners would then sign off on the easements. They're recorded in the Ulster County Clerk's office, and then they pass away. Their heirs then transfer property, and parcels get subdivided. But in the process of that happening, they actually describe their boundaries as, well, to the northern boundary of the railroad property. So all of a sudden, these parcels, let's say a large parcel, there's this sliver that's taken out and is assumed to be owned by the railroad, which it really doesn't own. It's really just an easement that the previous property owner had given to the railroad. And that easement can revert back to the original owner if the property is no longer used as a railroad. So what happens in the process is that these deeds, these properties are whacked and are smaller. So now all these properties that are adjoining the old rail, which we want to change into a rail trail, they have no interest in that parcel that's actually the rail trail, the actual tracks themselves, because they were never deeded it. The previous owner just forgot to deed that section over, and it's
in
limbo land.
So and bounds. It was not described as part
right.
of the original
not, not in the
parcel.
Late 1800s. So what happens is now you have this land that is not owned by anybody, that reverts back to
nobody.
So that's where we come into a problem. And the federal government is requiring us to quiet title. And the way to quiet title is through eminent domain. And that's why we have to go through the process of going through a public hearing and then actually going into Supreme Court, showing to one of the Supreme Court judges what we did to try and put notice to anybody out there of this potential. And we're talking about parcels, by the way. I think there's 11 parcels. All of them but one is smaller than a third of an acre. Some, as long as there's one that's 0.02 acres, 0.03 acres. They're landlocked, they're valueless. They don't really have a value. But the federal government requires us to go through this process if we want to use that $1.5 million. If we don't, we don't get the federal money. So that's why we're going through this process.
Legislator Litz, please.
Yeah, I mean, this is a question that goes back to when we were looking at the Ashokan Rail Trail. Because when the railroad takes an easement, and it's for the purposes of conducting the railroad's business, and then it gets abandoned, typically you try to bank it, you know, as long as the rails are there. Once the rails are there, I guess you can't do railroad banking. I had asked for, we have a consultant that's a lady down in Washington, D.C., and I can't remember the lawyer's name that we have.
Give me a minute. I sent the librarian back to get the name.
Right. I had asked 2 years ago that she come up and explain to us what happens when a railroad gets abandoned and not rail banked. Does that property revert back to the original property owner? I believe it does.
It does not automatically, no. It's
okay.
As long as there's a potential of use as its original purpose, it still can be.
Yes, and you just proved my point. There's easements. I have easements across people's property for farming. But if I no longer farm it, that easement goes away. And it may say, you know, for access to cut grapes. But if I want to put hay there, that easement goes away because there's a purpose for the easement.
Mm-hmm.
And once that activity ends, the easement ends. So once the railroad stops being a railroad and the county takes possession of the property, I believe the easement goes back to the original property owner. That's what I wanted to have explained to me 2 years ago when we were talking about Resolution 488. I never got my explanation. Now you're telling me that there's 11 pieces of property along this stretch of railroad that have been abandoned. No one's paying taxes on them?
I can't answer that question.
No, because if somebody's paying taxes on them...
Nobody's paying taxes on them. What he was describing... I'm sorry. I know.
Mr. White, that's it. Fine. Please.
Pardon
please.
Me. Mm-hmm. What he was describing is... Like, two of these are owned by the heirs of Thomas Cornell, the guy that actually built the railroad.
Okay.
So in those cases, like, Thomas Cornell owned it, and then he deeded it out. He owned the parcels next to it. And then he deeded it out, let's say, to one or two of his sons. And when that deed passed from Thomas to Thomas Jr., that sliver of land that was on the railroad was no longer on the deed or the description. So basically, the reversion...
It ceased to be an easement?
No, no. What happened is the easement on the railroad, and correct me if I'm wrong, the easement on the railroad continued, and that's what we own today. It was composed the right-of-way. However, the fee ownership under the easement disappeared about 140 years ago. We have done title work to try to figure out who might own it. And it goes back all the way to Thomas Cornell. In fact, this is so old that one of the deeds goes back to the village of Kingston, which no longer even exists. So the issue is, we're not proposing to do eminent domain against Brad Jordan because his property adjoins this and this has a reversionary interest to him.
Mm-hmm.
That property actually goes back to the Burnhams from 1870.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's impossible for us to figure out all of the errors. It would cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But railroad easements continue with the property.
But the property's gone.
Well, what I was going to say is if Mr. Cornell's great-great-great-great-great-grandson
decided that
he wanted that sliver of land.
Right. So what he would do is we have to value the land, and then we have to put into an account at the state comptroller's
mm-hmm.
office the fair market value of that. We're appraising those right now.
Good.
It's like DOT does with their appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a claim that's valid, they can go forward and they can get the money for it. Now, the important thing is this has been separated from these parcels since 1870,
mm-hmm.
and it's been owned and operated by the county since 1979 when we bought this aggregation of all these, you know, deed ownerships, condemnations, easements. So we couldn't.
When you buy the property, you don't buy the easement because the railroad had.
We bought a right of way, which is a combination of both. Like some of it we own in fee, right? We don't have to buy all of it. About 80% of it we own in fee, but in these 11 areas where it was easements only, nobody would ever challenge us.
Mm-hmm.
But for the federal government, we've got to be able to certify that we 100% know we own it in fee, so that nobody can come forward after we've built this and say, you got to rip up your railroad,
right.
You got to rip up that, you know, nice pavement you just put because I own it. And so what we're doing is an action basically to quiet the title.
As long as we do our due diligence. Because I know the one in Highland that you spoke of where we did eminent domain.
We didn't use eminent domain. We did the hearing and then we negotiated because I knew who owned it.
Yes, and Fabiano's property, it reverted back to him, and that's why we snaked out along on state right away. Because we couldn't take that because it would revert it back to him,
yeah.
And he used it.
Fabiano wasn't a landowner. I'm sorry.
Mr. Doyle, please.
I know what Mr. Liz is talking about. This has to do with the existing Mobile One Park in there.
Yeah.
That actually did not revert
back.
He
bought it.
It was a tax sale, and Ulster County, essentially, because of the way that the railroad was essentially taxed, the tax wasn't paid, and so we ended up selling that piece of property back. We sold up the old Maybrook line all the way down through there was actually sold by Ulster County on the basis of the fact that they wanted to get the lands back in the property owner.
The railroad owned that piece.
That's correct.
And but if that was an easement,
right,
it would have reverted back to Fabiano, and he put his mobile homes in this case.
He had an absolute right to it because the county actually sold him that piece of property.
So he bought the right of it.
Yeah.
And so, in other words, it was not an easement.
Yeah, no, and it wasn't a reverter. We actually physically made a deal and sold it back.
So, going forward, I mean, obviously you have to do your due diligence to locate the property owners.
Right. Notify.
Before we can take them by eminent domain.
Right.
But that still leaves the rest of our 38 point something miles that we need to ascertain whether there's any easements up there because, you know, we could get caught.
Well, we do. So what we've, I'm sorry.
No, yep.
I'm,
go ahead.
So like we know with the, for instance, we break it into sections, right? In the section where Catskill Mountain Railroad operates on their 4.5 miles, it's not an issue because we're continuing our railroad operations.
Mm-hmm.
in the area that you haven't delineated between milepost 8.3 and the Ashokan Rail Trail, it's not an issue right now because nobody's proposing to pull up track. If we were ever going to do that, we would have to do that due diligence. Along the Ashokan Rail Trail, fortunately, there was just one reverter for the 11 and a half miles, and that's DEP, and that's why we did that trail easement with them over the, you know, took years.
In addition to the railroad easement.
In the area between
what about
the
going north from
so
11 too?
Yeah, so from the Ashokan Rail Trail up to Phoenicia, we haven't pulled the track, and that's where Rail Explorers operates. From Phoenicia up to High Mount, we own it all in fee. So as they got later
except
on,
except where Mother Nature took it.
Yeah, Mother Nature owns about a mile and a quarter of it now.
And I wonder what
the great water goddess
if we ever want to put it back.
It's going to be
because it stopped being a railroad when Mother Nature took it.
Well, yeah, and under the federal law.
Anyway, that's discussion,
yeah.
not for this resolution, but it's something that we really need to get that.
We're kind of getting off track.
And I can't remember that lady's name, who's the lawyer at
literally
Washington, D.C.
And it hasn't come yet.
Who is on retainer to the county to answer these
questions.
Well,
this
questions
was years ago. She was. She was, but that was only for the Ashokan Rail Trail. And when we nailed down the Ashokan Trail easement,
okay,
we it obviated
pull back
the
to
need.
The Midtown
okay.
Linear Park, please.
So if I could just tell you the process going forward, we would do the public hearing on November 12th. It would be like the other ones. Eric and I get up and read a bunch of dry stuff. We hopefully do it quickly. And then we accept public comment for 30 days. We would then put in a determination and finding statements that doing this is in the public interest. You would then approve that or disapprove that, and then we would move forward with the project after that. This would definitely go to eminent domain because we literally don't have anybody to negotiate with. I would love it if Brad Jordan owned the reversionary interest because I could go down and have, you know, say I'll work with you
right
on this. I can't dig up a guy from 1870 and say,
you
how about
we have to dig up a guy?
Yeah, yeah,
but you would.
Okay.
So you know, Dennis has prohibited me from exhumations.
All right, we're gonna call for a vote. Calling for a vote on resolution 421, please. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed to 421?
This is for a public hearing.
Yes.
Thank you.
$300.
Okay. Thank you. So is that approved unanimously?
Yes.
Joe, you're a yes? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, resolution 422, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Labor to allow the Department of Planning to act as census designated affiliate, Department of Planning.
Move it.
Second.
Mr. Doyle, please.
Why do you want to take on another
job? Well, this is simple. We, by being a census designated affiliate, a couple things happen. One is that we are entitled to what they would call privileged information prior to its release for comment. Two is we get all the materials from the census for free. And three is we actually get free training from the Department of State with respect to the census designated affiliate. I would urge, we're also quite frankly looking at complete count issues associated with the census, which will begin obviously by April of next year. Complete counts are important. We've had conversations with municipalities about this. We've also had conversations with our IS department and working with our GIS folks in the county planning department to look at checks of databases that are out there, address bases that are out there, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a non-revenue contract and it's a minimal cost to the county, essentially a free training that we get for being a census designated affiliate. And this, we've been, since 2000, I think we've been a census designated affiliate.
It's
a 2000 census.
Okay. Any discussion from legislators? Now call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Passed unanimously. Right, we'll go back to the top of our agenda. Resolution 382, requesting the New York State Legislature introduce legislation removing the Ulster County Industrial Development Agency from Article 18-A of the New York's General Municipal Law. Is there a motion on this resolution?
So moved.
Okay.
Discussion. Ms. Legislator Maloney.
I'll give a fairly quick spiel and then we can vote it down and be done with it. you go back about 50 years to where New York State came up with the idea of creating this IDA process. I think Ulster County bought into it a couple of years later, 40 plus years ago. At that point, between 40% and 50% of New York jobs were industrial manufacturing. We're down to less than 5%. Ulster County may have even been higher than the average, being that IBM was our number one employer. I don't know what the exact count was, but it was upwards of 40% to 50%. Does anyone here think that we have less than 5% manufacturing industrial jobs? Because I'll remind everybody, without the IDA process, I'll remind everyone that that's what the IDA is all about. Not standalone hotels. We can think about the recent crane debacle, which ended up in a legal battle. Yasmin Towers, Governor Clinton, was a disaster. When they came to us for a 35-year pilot, I'll be 75. When we're done giving those handouts, and I'm only hearing that it is what many of us thought it was, what it was. Would New York State taxes be any worse without the IDA? I wonder if they'd be a little better without this process. I really honestly believe that Ulster County, these towns and cities, but the state as a whole really needs to say, and I know Senator Skoufis, who I've sat down with, is trying to clean up the process to a point and make it work a little better, make it a little harder to manipulate in all the wrong ways. But at the end of the day, I truly believe that abatements and these handouts end up doing more damage than good, and I think we would be in a better position without them. And I think at some point, whether it's 10, 15, 20 years down the line, I think at some point a brave governor is going to come along and start that conversation, and I think we'll end up without IDAs at some point. I really do. I don't fear the conversation. I don't think this is offensive in any way, even though I've had people agree and I've had other people almost act like it is offensive. I let many of the IDA members know that I more than respect. In fact, watching them clean up the process over the last couple of years is what kind of got me to that final point where I said, even with a great board that knows what they're doing, this isn't working. And I really believe that this is the kind of thing that's not supposed to die in committee. Whether it dies on the floor, and I'm sure it would, I think the people of this county and their hard-earned tax dollars have given away to a lot of entities that don't deserve them and never did what they said they were going to do. I believe it deserves to go to the floor for both public comment and for the public debate, and not to end in a room with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people all associated and working for the county. That's how I feel. I'm doubtful I'll get the votes to bring it to the floor, but I would appreciate it. I think it's the right thing to do.
Any other? Legislator Rodriguez, please.
Since I suspect I may be the intended audience for some of those comments.
One, two, three, six.
I was going to say, there's six. There's an 11, but that's okay.
11 people in the room.
You and I know, we went through this last month. We went through this even when you were drafting this legislation. I guess for my own just two cents, I guess I'm more or less explaining my vote before we vote. I will give you a vote to move it to the floor, but I just need you to understand, if this ever saw the light of day on the floor, I would not just debate you, I'd probably more like say some impolite things. So,
yeah.
You can't preemptively gamble.
I helped you out there.
However, on that note, Mr. Chair, though, I am done, so maybe we should
call the question.
All right. I'm going to call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Love it.
All right. Next resolution, 415. Establishing a program administration for the Ulster County Revolving Loan Fund Committee. There a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. Discussion. Legislator Rodriguez, please.
So I only received information today from Deputy County Executive Mark Ryder. And so if Dennis is still here, maybe he would care to explain. Apparently, conversations that have taken place in the first quarter of this year that I don't believe other legislators are aware of. So through the chair to the planning director, can you please catch us up?
Director Doyle, please.
Sure. If the committee would indulge me for a little bit, I just want to go into some history of how revolving loan funds got here, what they do.
It's in a resolution, Dennis.
Oh, well, I'd still like to take some time if the committee
please
would.
Please proceed.
Okay, sure. The revolving loan funds that are currently extant within that we're speaking about came about through applications that were made back in the late 90s. And they were community development block grant funds that were then available through HUD, not administered by the state. HUD was the administrating authority for New York State at the time. Those revolving loan funds came into the county directly related to specific projects that were submitted to HUD for approval.
Mr. Chair, point of information. Mr. Doyle, you mean 108 money.
No, I don't. Available. I actually mean community development block grant funds. I don't mean 108 money. The original applications for revolving loan funds had specific industries and specific projects associated with them. They weren't an application that effectively said, give us money to revolve around for a loan fund. They were actually done to do specific things for specific projects, including Elna Magnetics. There was a grocery store in Ellenville. There were other projects that were involved in those. And so at that particular point in time, when those went in, there was a contract signed with the Development Corporation. At the time, it was the Ulster County Development Corporation. And they were doing program delivery for the county and administration for the county. There was not a revolving loan fund committee to decide how that funding would be spent. It was essentially authorized by HUD to be spent for those particular projects. The money that came back from those projects were then paid back to the Development Corporation at the time. Those funds essentially became, as a payback to the Development Corporation, the county was under the consideration that was a way to essentially defederalize the funds. In other words, it came through the county, passed to a Development Corporation, paid back to the Development Corporation to relend, not under the control of the county relative to that relending, because it then became defederalized. The second part of that, which Legislator Rodriguez mentioned, was the 108 funds. 108 funds are not revolving loan funds. 108 funds are loans from HUD that are guaranteed by the value of the county, that are guaranteed to be paid back by the county. Each individual deal is submitted to HUD for approval, and it gets its own essentially payback schedule with respect to that. The lending for those funds took place. The authorization for use of those funds depends upon the amount of HUD money that you currently have available. Because we had somewhere in the neighborhood, because of the money that we had available, we were eligible to utilize up to $5 million worth of $5 million of 108 funds. The county began to look at how that was going to happen, and recognizing the fact that there was a requirement for the county to be on the hook to pay those funds back. There was a heated discussion that took place over several months relative to the structure of how we were going to deliver those funds and make decisions relative to those who gets the deal, so to speak. It was an authorization, it was funding that we had a drawdown from HUD. The discussion at that particular point in time was that the legislature leadership and the legislature itself through the committee structure had decided that they didn't want to be involved in making an approval on the legislative floor for every particular project that was done. At that point in time, they began to think about establishing a revolving loan fund committee or a committee that would make those deals and make those decisions of the deals. That committee was appointed by the chair, with the exception of several of the members served by title, including the director of the planning department, served by title. Those funds were then drawn down and moved out project by project. As we moved through that process later on in time, the county was in danger of losing those funds because they weren't committed or obligated to any specific project. We had an option. The option was we could draw all the funds down and create a temporary repayment schedule that essentially would repay HUD for the drawn down funds, even though they weren't assigned to a project. That's what UCDC did, and they used the money that was coming in from the state for from the funds for interest to pay back the HUD money based on a temporary loan program. Mm-hmm. HUD began to call those funding back, and as we were finishing up our loan portfolio.
When was this?
I don't have the exact dates in my head, legislator. I'm really sorry. I just don't remember. But it was into the 2000s, 2004, 2005 era that I remember where we were looking at that. What happened since that time, HUD goes out of business in New York State, and it's taken over by the Office of Community Rule. It was first taken over by something called the Governor's Office of Small Cities. The state of New York began to administer its own HUD funds, and they began to look at other funds that were out there. There was a call to essentially look at the unauthorized use of the unobligated use of Section 108 funds and bring them back and repatriate them, because the Governor's Office of Small Cities and its subsidiary, which is the Office of Community Renewal, was on the hook for the payback and a recapture of funds. So all of the 108 monies today have been paid back to HUD. We have, to the best of my knowledge in talking to finance, there are no revolving loan funds due. All right, there may be some money characterized within the Development Corporation as being 108 funds. It's probably there without a further explanation, and the records don't show it because of two things. One is interest paid, and two is we kept a loan loss reserved in that fund in case we didn't get a payback from a particular project. So from the 108 side, there's literally no funds to repatriate to the county. And if they were repatriated, I think there's like something in the neighborhood of $64,000, or there's less than $100,000 in that particular area.
As a point of information,
per
the financials of the EDA, there is, as of 2018, $37,744. Before that, I believe there was somewhere in the order of magnitude of about, probably a bit shy of $60,000. So there are, number one, still dollars available in, or rather, just there, basically housed at the minute by the EDA, which, by the way, we are no longer under contract with for any revolving loan services at this moment.
So they aren't necessarily...
The contract ended, by the way, December 31st, 2018.
Our obligations, the county's obligations to HUD have been satisfied. So that's the main thing you need to know. We've satisfied our obligations to HUD with respect to that fund. So where are we on the revolving loan fund? And where we are on the revolving loan fund is that they continue to revolve. A couple of things happen with respect to this. If the money has been defederalized, it belongs to the Development Corporation. It doesn't belong to the county. The discussions with respect to this has taken place with respect to the change from UCDC to the UCDA. We had auditors in, and we had attorneys in that looked at this. One of the auditors' comments was, you can't have funds on your books controlled by others as a board of directors. So the discussion then became is, what does this shovel-ready fund, the shovel-ready committee do if it can tell a development corporation how to spend its money? So the thought, the process behind that was to make the shovel-ready committee advisory to the board of directors on that basis, because the board of directors couldn't fulfill their fiduciary responsibility to the corporation if someone else could tell it how to spend its money. So the county, through all of its filings with the state, has avowed that it has no program income. It is avowed that essentially the money associated with the revolving loan fund as being paid back to the Development Corporation is no longer the county's money, it's the Development Corporation's money, and has, quote, in fact, been defederalized. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if the county makes the case and is successful that effectively the money hasn't been defederalized, and it constitutes money belonging to Ulster County as part of a revolving loan fund. As of April 1, 2019, because of HUD changes to the way they treat revolving loan funds and program income at the state level, the State Office of Community Renewal has said all revolving loan funds will be paid to the state immediately. So if the question is, whose money is it? If it's not the Development Corporation's money and it's the county's money, you won't have it for long because it's going to be required to be paid back to the state.
So who?
Legislator Maloney.
Who makes up the revolving loan fund committee?
I don't have an answer to that. That's not my, the appointment of that committee is my understanding is the appointment power rests with the chair of the legislature.
It's actually set forth by resolution. It was done by then Chairman Ronk in 2018.
So the legislature chooses this?
We set forward by title who actually serves on the revolving loan fund committee.
Who's there now?
However.
Who's on there now?
It's the chair of economic development. One appointee of the majority, one appointee of the minority, one member of the EDA, and I'm blanking, but just doing this off the top of my head. But regardless, it's actually set forth by resolution. I think there's like 5 or 7 members, something like that.
How many of them are county officials? How many of them are private citizens?
I haven't had a meeting yet.
They're all county officials. Well, no, I mean, and
they're all county officials appointed by county officials.
But this is also, you know, one of our problems because, you know, then we get a missive from the Department of Economic Development, sorry, Office of Economic Development, it's not a department yet, you know, basically canceling all revolving loan fund meetings by fiat, by the administration, basically canceling all of the revolving loan fund meetings when they're not empowered to go and do that. You know, I mean, like, this is all sort of just, like, part and parcel of where, you know, the lines were blurred, you know, sort of back in the day, and not to go and be pedantic, but at least based off of what my reading is, Mr. Doyle, the 108 fund dates back to 1996, the CDBG dates back to 1997. But that said, though, regardless, the timeline's off, so I'm trying to say this. So, regardless, though, considering this information was just given to me today by Deputy County Executive Ryder, I will move to postpone this resolution, but understand that will probably just be more to formulate an amendment rather than it going away. So
I'll second the postponement.
Thank you.
All in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, that is the last of our resolutions tonight. We have some new business, new and old business. First thing is setting the November meeting of this committee. The Tuesday in November, the ordinary day for this meeting would be Tuesday, November 5th, which also happens to be Election Day. We'd like to consider shifting this meeting to Thursday, November 7th at 5 p.m.
If I may, I do have a short PowerPoint that I can share with the committee if you do not have a copy that explains what I was talking about.
Please.
Thank you.
Can that be emailed to the members of the
committee?
Yeah,
can you give it to Nettie and she can send it to us? Thank you.
And just a further point of order, department's 2020 budget talks are scheduled for the November meeting of this committee. So that'll be on November 7th. So. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Oh, I heard. I should just call you right away. We're adjourned.
He got you anyway. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
You were.